WYPR is here to keep you connected to your community. And as our communities change amid the coronavirus pandemic, that connection is more important than ever before. Member support makes it possible. And if you can, we hope you'll help us out. If you're a sustaining member, consider increasing your monthly pledge or become a new member with a first-time gift. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link. And thanks.
This is Anibon Basu with your Monday Morning Economic Report. An astonishing 1.2 billion adults gained access to financial services worldwide between 2011 and last year, according to recently released information from the World Bank. To be more specific, the share of the adult population with an account at a bank or mobile money provider expanded to 69% in 2017, up from 62% in 2014 and 51% in 2011, according to a database produced by the World Bank. As indicated by writer Paul Kiernan, global policymakers consider financial inclusion to represent a potential poverty-fighting tool by supplying people with improved ways to save, borrow, buy, sell, and receive payments. The largest number of new bank customers can be found in South Asia, where hundreds of millions of Indians have acquired access to financial services over the past 6 years. Research indicates that this was driven by a government initiative to give official identification cards to nearly all of India's 1.3 billion people using biometric data like fingerprints and eyeball scans. In Africa, increasingly ubiquitous cell phones have given rise to so-called mobile money services that permit customers to carry out financial transactions without ever entering a bank. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Tuesday Morning Economic Report. By many metrics, the world has never been healthier. As indicated by The Economist magazine, since 2000, the number of children who perish before the age of 5 has fallen by nearly half. Global life expectancy has reached 71, a gain of 5 years. More children than ever are vaccinated, and diseases like malaria and tuberculosis are in retreat. While this represents massive progress over the past roughly 2 decades, there remains enormous room for improvement. At least half of the global population lacks access to what the World Health Organization deems essential, including prenatal care, screening for various forms of cancer, and vaccinations against diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough. Safe, routine surgery is out of the reach of 5 billion people. Those who are fortunate to be able to see a physician often pay a devastating price. More than 800 million people spend more than 10% of their annual household income on medical expenses, and nearly 180 million people spend more than 25%. What's more, sometimes seeing the doctor is not so good. In studies of consultations in rural Chinese and Indian clinics, about 12 to 26% of patients are correctly diagnosed. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Wednesday Morning Economic Report. One of the major events this summer will be the World Cup, the globe's festival of soccer. A new report indicates that this summer's World Cup could generate a total economic impact of nearly $31 billion on the Russian economy. As indicated by the Associated Press, this impact is attributable to the impact of visitation plus large-scale construction spending. The report goes on to indicate that around 220,000 jobs have already been created in preparation for the tournament. It is even suggested that the World Cup will encourage Russians to exercise more so that they will take fewer sick days from work. You're permitted to be skeptical about that. Indeed, these types of economic impact studies are often greeted with doubts. Russia also invested heavily to host the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, with as much as $50 billion spent, according to one government estimate. Those Olympics were viewed as pivotal to national prestige and emerged as the most expensive Winter Games in history. Despite all the doubts regarding economic impact, that lavish spending managed to transform Sochi into a year-round tourism hub for Russians. The Russian government subsequently claimed that the true cost of the Sochi Olympics was much lower. For WYPR, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Thursday Morning Economic Report. You may have noticed a spate of teacher walkouts in recent months, including in West Virginia and Oklahoma. People have different opinions about such things, of course, but most of us agree that economics is at the heart of such phenomena. Based on current trends, there are likely to be many more disputes between public sector workers and their employers in coming years. That's because for generations of Americans, working for a state or local government as a teacher, bus driver, nurse, or firefighter provided for a valuable place in America's middle class. Even as steel and shipbuilding factories disappeared, those in the public sector found that they could still afford a home, a nice vehicle or two, and even a family vacation. As indicated by writers Patricia Cohen and Robert Gebeloff, in recent years, the ranks of state and local employees have languished, even as the populations they serve have expanded. Public employees now account for the smallest share of the American civilian workforce since 1967. The approximately 19.5 million workers who remain are increasingly finding themselves financially downgraded as state and local governments wrestle with rising Medicare, healthcare, and other costs, as well as growing taxpayer angst. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu. This is Anibon Basu with your Friday Morning Economic Report. When one considers the Ford Motor Company, one might think about iconic vehicles like the Model T, the 32 Deuce Coupe, the Thunderbird, and of course, the Mustang. As indicated by a recent Bloomberg article, for much of its 115-year history, Ford has been synonymous with cars. But today, Ford management is considering the unthinkable, and shareholders seem to like the idea. Ford is considering abandoning the American car business almost entirely. Just 2 years from now, a mere 10% of the vehicles rolling off Ford's assembly lines and into North American showrooms will be sedans and sports cars like the Focus or the Mustang. The balance will be pickup trucks, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, deemed to be more lucrative models that the company hopes will secure its future as change permeates the industry. This evolving state of affairs is quite remarkable. Just a few years ago, the notion was that Americans would be quickly moving to smaller vehicles given rising fuel costs. But after years of low oil and gasoline prices, American consumers are migrating back toward SUVs and big trucks like Ford's bread and butter F-Series. For WYPR and my esteemed producer Bob White, I'm Anibon Basu.